Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio. Live. This is the Gus Bradley Show. Gus Bradley Show. Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach Gus Bradley. And Gus, kind of a challenging week for you. And that, you know, you have a game last week against the Carolina Panthers that you don't get the result or the performance that you expected. But at the same time, you're dealing with a lot of injuries this week. And how is that going?
Well, you know what, to use an old cliche, injuries are part of it. And I think as coaching staff and as the players, we recognize that's going to be part of the game. And that's why you build depth. I was talking to Mike Mallory, our special teams coach. And during the training camp, he would go four deep. And some guys that you'd say, well, the chance for him to play special teams is unlikely. But he trained him. He trained him through the whole process. And he said, it's for times like this. You know, all of a sudden you need that third or fourth guy to step up. And the learning curve for him is short now because he got all those reps in training camp. So you adjust and you go with it. And I always tell the team, you know, there's injuries. It's unfortunate. But there's great stories that can take place when guys get opportunities.
I got the impression that some of the players were a little angry after that game because, I mean, they were, I don't want to say angry at anybody else, but, I mean, maybe angry at themselves. Hey, look, we felt like we should have played better. And to me, that's a good sign.
Yeah, it is. You know, and I think they felt like, why didn't we play better? And they were, you know, mad and frustrated. And then it went to, why didn't we? You know, and, you know, what was the reason? And then it went to where they kind of figured it out and, you know, try to come up with some sort of a feeling. And we tell the truth and we go through the film. But, you know, sometimes you get so excited for that first opportunity. And you see some veteran guys and you see Mercedes handle it real well. And then some other guys, they get amped up.
Yeah.
And whether that was
– hey, look, I was amped up.
Yeah, and it can be good. You're anxious. You know,
I was in the booth. I was in the booth. I got goosebumps, and I'm ready to go.
Right. And, you know, so I think the good news is we look back at it and we say, hey, we got some very, very capable players of playing at a high level. And you know what? We just didn't play as a team as high as we wanted to, but we can. And, you know, that was really the message this week. And to get back to work, refocus, and let's go out there. And the only thing we can do is change this week's performance.
And I think as a coach, you always want to react to things, right? But you don't ever want to overreact to things.
You do. And I think, you turn it on the tape and you watch it and you go, okay, this is the reason why it happened. Or this, you're always looking for the reasons why. And sometimes you just got to watch the film and shut it off and go through some things and reevaluate it. And then it comes down to where, you know what, this group played pretty good and this group did some good things. We just need to be more consistent. And it is the first game. But you have to react to what happened. You know, it is a bar has been set now. We know where we played. We've seen good play in preseason. We know what we're capable of, and we just got to get back on track.
How do you watch film? You know, let's say the game concluded on a Sunday, and are all your Sundays or Mondays the same? Do you take a break and step back away from it for a little while to maybe decompress and then wait to watch the film on Monday? Or as the head coach, do you – I got to watch it right now. Sunday right after the game, just jump right in.
Right. Well, you know, you have meetings afterwards with the training staff and the doctors and Dave Caldwell, and you go through that. And then usually that buys me enough time to where the video's done. And I try to watch the whole game, all phases, on Sunday night, and then try to rewatch it again on Monday morning and to go through it. And this happened, I watched it twice on Sunday, and then again on Monday, just to try to get a clear picture of, you know, what to tell the team and really address it. You know, and then it gets to about 11:30, and we kind of have an idea, you know, what we saw on tape.
11:30 in the morning on Monday.
Right. But the players, they have a lot of questions. They don't get the opportunity to watch the game and figure out what happened. So they're coming in with a lot of unrest of saying, hey, what took place? Let's watch this. They're anxious to get to it. And, you know, and then you proceed as a unit and as a team and as a position group.
Have you ever had a Sunday night where you walked away from the film and said – one thing, and then Monday came back and watched it again and maybe had a different outlook on it just to maybe take a step back?
Sure. Yeah, it does happen. I think, you know, say, for example, the, you know, Blake's interception for a touchdown. You know, not to rehash that, but I think there's some teachable moments there. You know, it happened, and right away you think, ah, God, you know, we just, you know, did he bounce back from that, or did we bounce back as an offense? And then you think, yeah, that's probably what happened. We didn't face that adversity and handle it right. And then you go back and you watch the tape when we ran the ball, and then he threw a screen to Denard, and then it was a third down, I believe, and he threw a dig, and, you know, we didn't catch it. But it was right on the money, and you're going, well, wait a minute. He handled that part pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, where initially maybe you thought that he didn't. Now the last two drives, you know, as an offense, we didn't do as good as we'd hoped. That's a fact, and we'll get that straightened out. But you do, Logs. You do go through it and rehash it, and sometimes you get a different perspective.
Yeah, because, I mean, I never wanted to watch something right away because you're still kind of attached to the emotion of the game. To where, I mean, you know, making best decisions sometimes are always when you're detached emotionally and you can just look at it for what it is sometimes.
Yeah, but it's hard.
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, you want to watch it and you want to go through it. And that's why sometimes you watch it a second time. And when we watch the tape, you know, it's not like, okay, I watched the game. It took about 45 minutes, you know, to watch a game, and you're watching every position, and then you're trying to get an understanding of the flow of the game and how it all fits together and what takes place and how is our emotions dealing with this. I mean, it takes quite a while to go through the whole tape. So,
what, about 3 hours, two, 3 hours?
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, after watching once. So, you know, when you go through it like that intently, you know, some things pop into your mind, and then you go to sleep, you wake up the next morning, you watch it, and some views change a little bit.
And some of the views change, and a lot of views change sometimes on the outlook for the following week because of injuries that occur on game day. And I mean, I go back to my notes here that I made during the game. Rashad Green left the game with a concussion head injury, apparent. Aaron Colvin had a shoulder. Luke Jokel had an ankle. Armbrister had a back. And I saw the injury report today. I mean, there's a lot of guys that aren't practicing today.
Yeah, you know what? And this will be more day-to-day. We'll find out. You know, some guys are making very good progress, and we'll reevaluate it tomorrow, and then we'll reevaluate on Saturday. And some guys, it might be before the game. You know, we'll see how they come through. Our training staff does a great job, and Milo with the strength and conditioning. You know, we'll see how they show up.
If you could change the roster size, because you know you've got 53 on the active roster and you've got what, 10 practice squad guys,
right?
If you could change the active roster to a number, decrease it or increase it, what would you like to see done?
Well, you know what, you always would take extra, you know, guys on the active roster, so you know that always helps out a team. But you know, this has gone back and forth in ownership meetings and when we get together, and there's arguments for both sides. So, you know, I was very pleased that the practice squad went up in numbers.
And they changed kind of the requirements for players to be on it.
Sure. So
a little more flexibility there.
A little bit more flexibility. So that helps a team, you know, especially when you have some injuries as far as getting guys in there that are, you know, can replace and are capable. So, you know, you as a coach, you'd always take more numbers. But there's reason for it, and it's a level playing field.
How was practice Wednesday and today? You know, you come back from, you know, adversity like that in the game and disappointment and anger, whatever else players feel. A lot of times as a coach, you kind of, and even as a player on a team, you would kind of get a vibe on that practice Wednesday and then also carrying it over to Thursday. What was your vibe out of it?
Well, our practices are very intense, I would say. You know, sometimes we have to, you know, take the helmets off, put them on the side just to lower the intensity a little bit. So there's never an issue with our intensity or our practice. But I think what we did on Wednesday was try to heighten the environment, try to get these guys, some of the guys, I mean, some have handled it before and played multiple games. But some of the younger guys where they haven't played as many, we tried to heighten the environment to really showcase that when the environment's heightened, they just stay true to their fundamentals. And when they do that, they play very well. You know, that's kind of how we addressed it. It wasn't, hey, we drop balls, we better get in the jugs machine and do all that. And, you know, well, that's what we do every day. You know, some drops happen in games. But it's more to really challenge yourself to stay true to your fundamental principles through a heightened environment.
How do you heighten the environment?
Well, you know, it's challenging. But, you know, sometimes with the, you know, when we throw routes on air, instead of two lines, it's one line, and all the coaches are watching one line. Mm-hmm. And there's five coaches watching one receiver run his route, just so he feels that. And then performs at a high level. You say, see, it's no different now. It's no different. And, you know, that was spread throughout the team, though. So I would say, you know, very good practices. The intensity was there, but just felt like it was, you know, more heightened because of some of those strategies that we used.
How was Blake Bortles Wednesday and today?
Very good. I mean, Blake, he wanted to practice right away, mm-hmm. you know, and get back to work.
That's what competitors do.
They do. And I think that he felt like, you know, maybe he was really excited for this opportunity, had good preseason, amped up, and really wanted to do very well. And didn't perform like he wanted to. And but I hate to say it, just Blake, you know, I think as a team we felt like that. So everybody was excited to get back to work and kind of regroup, refocus, and, you know, go from there.
When you talk about him being amped up, I think back to that play. It was a first and 10, and he scrambles, and all of a sudden he tries to cut it back, and he ends up taking – you know, a hit from one of their defensive tackles who probably weighs about 320 pounds. And look, I appreciate competitiveness. You know, much like going back to the Pittsburgh game in the preseason where he's reaching that ball for the pylon, we talked about it. And that you love that stuff out of him. I mean, you love that aspect of it, but on first and 10, cutting it back to the middle field, I'm like, Blake, what are you doing, man? Go down. It's 16 games.
Right. And it's an emotional game, and it should be played with emotion. And, you know, those traits we love about them. But, yeah, sometimes that emotion gets you to do things that normally you don't do. And but that's all right. We got to get us, you know, everybody's world calmed down a little bit. And that's so important for our guys to play at their best. And, you know, that's really the greatest lesson that we learned there. And we've got some veteran guys that will help out.
I really appreciated what he said when he was asked about the drops. This week he said, look, I don't go and yell at those guys if they have a drop. He said, just like, you know, I wouldn't expect them to yell at me for throwing the ball 5 yards over their head out of bounds.
Right. Yeah, and so true. You know, and sometimes, you know, people are looking for answers, just like coaches and players are looking for answers. And you go through the tape and you go, well, that must have been the reason. And it's legit. You know, I understand that, and we all understand that. And you address it, but how you address it and how you go about attacking it to ensure these guys have the confidence that they can make the play when their number's called again. We've got great deal of confidence with our guys, great deal of confidence. I mean, Allen Hurns is a fierce competitor, and Allen Robinson and Rashad Green and you know, the whole list of them. So, you know, we've got complete trust and faith in them and with our whole team. And, you know, that's what I said. We'll play better this week, without a doubt in my mind. We'll play better. And, you know, we just got to learn from these lessons.
And I know those young players can't wait. I mean, when you're young, you're like, let me go back to work.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
For season tickets, single game tickets, or to learn more about being a Jaguars 365 member, call 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com. More to come right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach, Gus Bradley. And the injury report this week is certainly very deep. Looking at the Miami Dolphins, they don't have a ton of injuries to report. One guy that wanted to talk a little bit about, send Eric Marks. And a lot of people kind of looking at, like, the Send Eric watch where, like, you know, it's a weekly thing. Okay, is he going to play this week or is he going to play next week? I thought it was interesting in that with the NFL rules, the way the rosters go, you know, Send Eric is, what, you know, nine and a half months post-op with his ACL reconstruction. And if you guys put him on PUP or something like that, the rehabilitation process for him really changes, doesn't it? Because he can't practice and he can't do anything football wise. Is that not right? I mean, shouldn't they maybe amend the rules a little bit to where a player who is on one of those lists, PUP or whatever, has the opportunity to rehab and do football rehab? Because, I mean, really, getting back to football means you got to start doing football stuff without right. taking away from a roster spot.
Well, that's the challenge on PUP. You know, if he's on PUP, then he works out with our strength conditioning coach. And, you know, they do drills off to the side. But there's nothing like playing and practicing the game. You know, the different movements that take place and even an individual drill work. And we just felt like for Senderic, that is what he was at a point then where he needed to do that. And, you know, a couple weeks of that. And, you know, and then he finds out some of the limitations he has, and then he can build strength in those areas and go from there. So, yeah, it does. You know, now he's starting individual work, and he's made great progress, and there's some areas that he needs to work on. But now we can focus our attention on that. If he was on PUP, we wouldn't know this.
Couldn't do anything.
No, he couldn't do anything and with the coaching staff or with the position coach. So then when he comes off of PUP, then it's another couple of weeks where he's doing football activity. So just to give him the best chance to return at the quickest rate.
And at whatever time rate that is.
That's right. However, you know, soon that we see him and he's playing at a high level and individual, and then get him some team reps and go from there. So it's a process, and we just felt like this would speed up the process for him.
From talking with him, I mean, just the same Simdark. I mean, great personality, upbeat. You've seen the same thing in the rehab process. You don't see, I mean, a player like that a lot of times, once the season starts, I mean, you want to play, but you don't sense any frustration on his part, do you?
No, no frustration, but Henry, you know, yeah. You know, he wants to get back and play bad and fast, and, you know, is going about it and wants to speed this whole thing up. And, you know, he's working his tail off, and he's doing everything that we're asking. And but you're right, the leadership is so important in that room, that defense line room, and with our defense, still, you know, has a great impact on the mentality that we want to present as a defense.
Another guy that working his way back, Marquise Lee. How's he doing?
He's doing pretty good.
Right, limited today,
yeah.
Limited?
Yeah, and he did pretty good in practice. So we'll see, you know, that he's still in the evaluation mode this week and see, you know, if he has a chance to play or not, you know, based on how he feels tomorrow and Saturday. And, you know, like I said, sometimes there's game decisions that we have to make.
Yeah, that's one guy that, I mean, how many times has he practiced? I mean, I'm not trying to be critical of him. I'm not trying to call him an albino tiger, and that's not being critical. I thought that was kind of fit. But anyway, not to be in a critical sense. But, I mean, a young player like that that hasn't had a lot of reps, you know, whether it been in preseason or training camp or off-season activities, I mean, the expectation level is high for him because, I mean, you know, you see the talent that Marquise Lee has, but do you have a high expectation level for him to be able to come back out and contribute right away?
Well, you know, what I appreciate with Marquise is that he competed all the way through this injury that he's had. You know, in the meetings, taking notes, learning the offense, going through the watching the walkthroughs, you know, so he stayed up mentally on it. So now it's the physical part, you know, getting back in shape, and even though he's been running and stuff, again, now he's trying to get back into football shape. So we'll see how his conditioning improves throughout the week.
How is Toby Gerhardt?
Toby's doing good. He's making some good progress. You know, again, another guy that we got to wait and see, you know, with where his status is based on the training room report.
You know, I remember coming out of the preseason, and I don't want to say I was critical, but T.J. Yeldon was named the starter right out of the gate, and he had, you know, one game in the preseason where he had 8 carries. And you're looking at him going, oh, yeah, you know, you liked what you saw in practice, but it's practice. What are you going to get on game day when the real games start? And I thought for the first game out of the box, I mean, not only did he run the ball very well, but I thought he was really good in protections. I thought his awareness was outstanding. And the one I point to is the 2-minute drill where he caught the ball and then made a great move, an ankle-breaking move on one of the guys, and then got out of bounds. I mean, wow. Pretty good.
Well, you know, with TJ, one of his greatest traits is his instincts. You know, very instinctive football player. And instinctive as far as understanding situational football, and instincts of playing the running back position. And just has a really good feel for the game. One area that we really wanted to check him out on was his protections. And, boy, he's really made great strides in that area. And you'd like to have all your backs be first, second, and third down backs. And if he can do very well in protections, that just elevates his status with us.
The tight end position, a lot of people say, well, where were the tight ends at on Sunday? And I thought that the Carolina Panthers, especially like down at the goal line, when you guys had, I think it was 1st and 10, you tried to run the what appeared to be like maybe a fade to, was it Allen Robinson,
yep,
or Rashad Greene? You had Mercedes split out wide left, but then you had the safety, and I can't remember the name of the safety, the guy that's got some age to him. He's got gray hair. The safety played in New Orleans for a long time. I'm drawing a blank on that one. Anyway, the safety shaded over, cheated over, so you got a corner.
Roman Harper.
You got a corner on top of Mercedes Lewis, and then you got the safety cheating over the top. I mean, hey, look, you know, a lot of people wondering where the tight ends at. in certain instances. I mean, look, the other side of the ball gets coached well, too. And if they got, the second guy cheated over to play over the top, sometimes that's not the throw for the quarterback to make.
Right. And the quarterback's got to trust his reads, too, and he gets out there. Obviously, there's plays designed, opportunities for the tight ends and things like that to try to get guys like Mercedes and Clay Harbor the ball. But, a quarterback has to trust his reads, and some of those reads took him away from. But they're an important part of the game. Not only are they good run blockers and help in pass protection, but they're athletic. We saw Mercedes and Clay in preseason do some good things. So you always try to get the guys that you trust, the ball's in their hand, and those guys are two of the guys that we have.
All right, we come back here on the Gus Bradley Show. I want to ask you, Pa's had a great game. Clemens had a real nice game. I want to get your thoughts on maybe who else had a great game, whether it be offense or defense, that maybe we didn't see. One of the guys maybe in the trenches, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
First down to the 32. Two tight ends, that shotgun for Newton. Dropping the throw, pumping. Now he fires it out to the left side. Intercepted. Paul Posluszny has picked it off. Inside the 30 as he returns it. He is going to be brought to the ground inside the 25-yard line. But a huge play by Puz. And Jacksonville is in business inside the 25-yard line of Carolina.
Excellent call by play-by-play man Frank Frangie there on Paul Posluszny's interception. And no surprise that Paul Posluszny plays well. But, a lot of people have forgotten that last year he tore the pectoral muscle, had to have it repaired, and you almost forget about it with him because Paul is such a dependable guy. He's out there every day of practice. He's not on injury reports this year, and boy, did he have a nice game.
Boy, I tell you, you talk about appreciation. Sometimes you look at other things and you got to deal with things and fix this or take a look at this, and that's one position where you don't have to put a lot of attention because he has a great understanding of the role and the position he plays and the nuances of the defense. And, we were just talking, he really feels good. I mean, he feels better this year than he has, the last couple of years as far as his legs and his freshness. And, he played like it. So very, very dependable and very important aspect of our defense.
He's one of those guys I've always enjoyed watching because appreciation for the amount of conditioning that he has. Whether it's first play of the game or the last play of the game, Paul Posluszny is still going at whatever speed he started the game at.
And great leader. I mean, leadership.
Is he doing blood doping or something?
You talk about influence on a team, and just his presence. Not a big talker, not going around rah-rah, just plays the game hard. And it really filters throughout the whole team.
Love watching him play. He's the captain. Chris Clemens had an excellent game. A lot of people were concerned about him, having missed a good portion of the preseason. But a 12-year guy, and all he does is come out and have a sack, which, that does not surprise me. Had a nice spin move on the blindside Michael Orr. But I think the play that impressed me the most was the blocked field goal, because that's an effort play, and that's a commitment play to me. And I think that spoke volumes about Chris.
Well, it does. It speaks volumes for Chris. It speaks volumes for this team. I think sometimes you feel like it's a cliche about, hey, this team's playing with really good effort and want to. A great illustration, right, Lugs? I mean, block a field goal, that part of the game, and competing their tail off. And that's what, once again, I appreciate about this team. And, Clem was an example of it, but there's multiple guys that have that same mentality.
All right, let's go to the phone lines if you want to get in. 1-800-355-NFL1 or locally 355-6351, and let's go talk to Bill this evening. Good evening, Bill.
How are you? Good evening. How are you?
Good, Bill.
I've been wanting to call you up on the Gus Bradley Show ever since it started, but I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the show. It's such a good show. I wanted to tell you that I've been a radio junkie for 30 years, and I've been listening to this show, and it's got to be the best Jaguars football show since the inception of the team. And I got you learn so much of the players and the coaches and the team in general, and I think the reason is that you got both of you guys have giving personalities, unlike some self-serving interviewers, who want to prove that they're smarter than the coach, you know, the kindergarten mentality, as we talked about this week. You know, it's just you know, you guys really, you know, Jeff Larmon, coach, you got to admit, he of the non-certified personnel out there, he probably studies the Jaguars as about as much as you do. And, you know, he cares about it, and it's just so wonderful to listen to this show. You ought to get some kind of an award somewhere. You know what I mean?
I appreciate that, Phil. But okay, I don't study nearly as much film as Gus, I can assure you of that.
Well,
I know.
You're right, Bill. It's a great guy. Is that your brother-in-law?
Yeah, I think it's my cousin.
Yeah. No, Bill, yeah. I mean, you're right. I do. You know, Logs takes great pride in his craft. And you see him. I see him in that room, Logs, studying the tape and watching it and looking at matchups and things like that. So, and it shows.
Thank you, Bill.
I just wanted to call up and tell you. Okay, bye-bye.
I appreciate that, Bill. Checks in the mail. Always nice to have a little bit of a compliment. But, you know, it's a great show. I mean, I appreciate your willingness to participate in it because, you know, a lot of head coaches are resistant to radio. You know, and you know, a lot of coaches are resistant to taking a phone call after a loss, and you're not.
No, you know, I think, you know, we talked about that, you know, take phone calls. And, you know, you never want to be somebody that takes them after a win, but now a loss, all right, let's not take any. Yeah. I mean, our fans are so important to this whole process. And believe me, Logs, I mean, you talk about our players playing effort with great effort from start to finish. How about our fans,
yeah.
You know? So, you know, I appreciate them, and they're just passionate. And, shoot, that's the type of players we want, and that's the type of fans we want.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back. We'll probably take a few more calls, and then also want to talk a little bit of the Miami Dolphins because a little bit of carryover from Carolina to the Miami Dolphins, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
This segment of the Gus Bradley Show is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Jeff Loggeman with the head coach. And Gus, before we took Bill, I had brought up the point that Paz and Clem had excellent games. And to the naked eye, I mean, most people, when you watch fans, or when fans are watching a game, they follow the ball. And sometimes it's very hard to say, okay, well, this guy played well, because, you know, a lot of times they're not around the ball. If you had to pick a couple guys, maybe one on offense, one on defense, or however you want to do it, or special teams, who is maybe somebody that played very well that most people may not know?
I thought on defense, Roy Miller really showed up. I thought he did a really nice job. You know, he's another guy that you trust so much. You know exactly what you're going to get from week in and week out. And, you know, Roy bounced back, and you know, we tried to limit him some in training camp. And, boy, he showed up on Sunday. So he's a guy that really stood out.
Played strong.
Yeah, he really did. And offensively, Wiz. I thought Wiz did a nice job. You know, so you go right across from Roy, a guy that on the offense side, sometimes in the interior you don't see guys. And just his command of the offense and, you know, taking control and things like that, I think very pleased.
How about special teams? Now, because
D Mac, you know, Demetrius McCray.
Okay.
He did a
role he's never really, I mean, he did early
he
on.
Did, yeah, he did last year. Yeah. He was a guy that Mal really likes. And, you know, he came out, made a couple tackles. He plays extremely hard. And, you know, talk about a guy that plays multiple teams and gives tremendous effort. And, you know, we saw him as a gunner make a play. And, you know, he had a nice day.
While we're on special teams, Jason Myers, tough day, misses the extra point, and then has the missed field goal. And I was reading one of his quotes this week, and he talked about why he thought he missed, and which I think is very mature for a young player. He said, look, I got fast. And you just don't find a lot of young kickers that actually talk about the process. And I think being able to recognize what went wrong to be able to correct that going forward, I think is a good sign.
Well, you know, we always challenge our players. It's like, okay, what happened that play? And, or, you know, you might say, hey, that play was unfortunate. They go, yeah, I got to get better on that play. And it's like, no, that's not good enough now. Why? You know, why didn't you, you know, what would you do differently if you had that opportunity? And you force them to answer it. And that way it really locks in and they say, you know what, next time I do that, that's what I'm going to do. And so it's a great tribute to him. You know, if he felt like, hey, wait, okay, I missed it, next time I'll make it. Well, why and what would you do differently? So, you know, you challenge your guys to think that way so that the next opportunity they get, they have a better understanding.
All right, let's take another phone call. Let's take Chris on the west side. Good evening, Chris.
Good evening, gentlemen. Gus, you had a press conference on Monday where you mentioned you didn't see the carryover you wanted from practice to the game.
Sure.
And I feel like I've heard that on more than one occasion. I mean, I try to put myself in your shoes. You know, if I was on the offensive coaching staff, I might have a few trust issues. Like, I'm not sure I could trust guys to do their job to make that carryover. Now, you said earlier in the show you've got the supreme confidence in your players, and I believe that's genuine, but what if this trend continues? What will happen to the trust level then?
Well, it's a great question. It's a challenging question. I think that you, you know, we always say, hey, I trust people from the start. I trust our players from the start, but I think you trust until proven unreliable is probably the best way to say it. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, players are counting on you. You know, some guys have games that they don't play as well as they'd hope. But you challenge them and you see them working on it and improve. And as long as you see those traits coming, that trust is there. And, you know, now it's our job and their job to really take those qualities from the practice field and play in the game. And, you know, when you see it in the practice tape or game, practice, and you know that they need to carry it over, you want to try to help them as much as possible. And sometimes guys that are a little bit younger have a little bit longer leash, you know, than mm-hmm. some guys that are a little bit older. So yeah, I guess it goes back to we're there with them every day in practice, and we know what we see. And it's my job as a coach to help them perform with those same capabilities on Sunday.
Yeah, when you talk about trust, it also kind of, to some extent, becomes faith. I mean, if you talk about Jason Myers, you know, you watched him all offseason, all training camp, incredibly consistent. And to be able to make the move, okay, we're going to commit to a young player here that clearly has had an outstanding offseason and training camp. There's trust because he's been so consistent, but there also is a level of faith because the regular season's a little bit different.
Right. I think, you know, that's what faith is, what? Belief, you know, and you have strong beliefs in him. And, you know, this decision that we made with the field goal kicker, with Jason, you know, was, you know, charted and put him in different situations. And you make the best decision, the decision that you think is best for your team. And, you know, that we stand behind him and we feel strongly about him. And we're not going to waver off of a missed field goal. Although he knows, like I said, as long as they can answer what they would do differently and why it happened, and then let's go fix that part. And, you know, see improvement along the way.
One game. It's always hard after one game because, yeah, you know, it's all about one game. You know,
it is. But, you know, it's the NFL, man,
it is
passionate. And you love that part of it. And that's why you want to be a part of it, because of that. And it's high stakes. And, you know, you love that passion. And the players understand it, too. So,
all right. Thank you for the call, Chris. Let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll take a few more calls, and we'll also talk some Miami Dolphins right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show with the Miami Dolphins coming into town this Sunday. 4:05 kick, I believe it is. And we will have coverage starting at 1 o'clock right here on the Jaguars Radio Network. Well, that's actually at 3, but we will have the tailgate show starts at 1. Did I get that right, or am I just totally screwing that up? One thing I do know is pregame television is on WJXT at 11:30, even though there's a 4 o'clock kick. So, but anyway, the Miami Dolphins coming to town. Joe Philbin, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, 24-23 or 24-25 overall record. Did you ever get a chance to meet him?
Yeah, I have. I've talked to Joe over the phone, and you know, does a very good job, very well respected throughout the league, you know, by coaches around the league and by his players.
I was looking at his coaching roster. He's got a lot of them. I think like 23 coaches. One of them, obviously, Mark Duffner, the linebacker coach, longtime Jacksonville Jaguars linebackers coach.
Yeah, Duff was awesome. And Duff is, you know, you learn, you know, when he had the chance to go with Joe, he spoke very highly of Joe, too. So, like I said, he's, you know, both of them are held in high regard.
And Joe Philbin is an offensive coach, came from the Green Bay Packers, Mike McCarthy, offensive mind. They drafted Ryan Tannehill, I think, on his first draft. A young player, and I was looking at his numbers, started out his rookie year with a rating of like a 76.1, second year in 13, an 81.7, last year a 92.8. I mean, boy, isn't that the kind of progress you want out of a young quarterback?
It is, you know, and he's progressed every year, and that's what you're looking for in young quarterbacks is they continue to get better. And I think what you see in him now, he's playing with more poise. You know, it seems like he has a better understanding. It's his second year in this offense. Has a better understanding of it, and you know, feels real comfortable in it.
It's a different offense too, and from a defensive perspective, a little bit of carryover, because I mean the Carolina Panthers and the Miami Dolphins both run some of the read option concepts, and so you get a little carryover, and that's kind of uncommon, isn't it? I mean, there's probably what, three teams in the league, maybe Seattle a little bit with Russell Wilson, but there's not a lot of teams that run this type of offense.
Right. It's similar in that the quarterback will keep it and run with it. Mm-hmm. You know, but as far as how they do it, their scheme, some of the added motions, different formations, you know, how they go about it, then it's different. So
because this game is like a track meet, isn't it?
It is.
For you guys on defense, because they spread the field with that Miami Dolphins offense.
They do. They like a lot of three wides, and, you know, they have the two tight end sets too. But, you know, they try to get as many skilled guys on the field at the same time.
Jarvis Landry had last week against the Washington Redskins, I think it was 11 touches for 141 yards. He's had a streak, I think, of 10 consecutive games of five catches or more. Second-year player out of LSU is certainly a factor for them.
Yeah, and they probably want to get him the ball more. You know, he's that type of a player. Highly, highly competitive athlete. You know, a guy that plays offense and special teams and performs well in both. So, you know, like I said last week, we were talking about Greg Olsen. You know, you got to have great awareness of, you know, where Jarvis is at all times.
And they also have Greg Jennings, a 10-year wide receiver, and I know that you guys were kind of in hot pursuit with him when he was in free agency. He's averaging 14.6 yards a catch in his career, pretty strong. But the one guy that kind of stands out when you watch film is the tight end Jordan Cameron. Cleveland Browns tight end, had some concussion issues, now is with the Miami Dolphins, four catches for 73 yards, and they're not afraid to split him out.
No, you know, he's like a big wide receiver type player, and you know, it's not just intermediate routes now. They run seams with him and deep developing routes, so treat him like a receiver and trying to get a bad matchup.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, I'll talk a little Ndamukong Suh. Right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Let's take another phone call and talk to Carolyn on the north side. Good evening, Carolyn.
Yes, I would like to know, I'm glad I'm on Gus Bradley's show, because I am very concerned, and so is my family and friends. We want to know why Brian Walters should not be the starting wide receiver when he's the only wide receiver that have the surest hands, and he don't drop balls. Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns, they're not doing their job. Gus Bradley should not be our coach if he can't see the talent. And Brian Walters, he's the only durable receiver that we have. Why you letting him sit on the bench and not starting? Had he started Sunday, we probably would have had a victory.
Well, what do you say to that, Gus?
Yeah. There goes the show.
Carolyn's
not
coming
just
at
good,
you.
Good calls, yeah.
Thank you, Carolyn.
You know what, Brian Walters, you know, he had a really good preseason. He did a good job in preseason and played special teams, and that's what he is. I think she understands who he is very well. He's very trustworthy, and, you know, you just look at traits and what they can bring to the table. There's so much more to it, but he is. That's why a reason why Brian Walters made our team, mm-hmm. You know, and he's part of the 53, so... You know, but those guys too, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Rashad Green. I mean, Rashad Green, he was targeted how many times? 10, I think, or something like that, or 8, 9. He caught 7 passes for the yards he did and a touchdown, and he's a rookie.
The most impressive catch that he made to me was the touchdown, because that was a hot one.
Right.
I mean,
you know, so
close in, and it was on top of him as soon as he turned around.
Right. So, you know, these guys, I can appreciate their comments. We see them every day in practice, and we know what they're capable of. And, you know, it's our job to get that transition from practice to the game field. And but I'm glad she speaks highly of Brian Walters. I think we think highly of him as well.
Oh, and he's a smart guy. He went to Cornell.
Yeah. Sharp.
That's a good thing. On the other side of the ball, there might be the smartest man that's ever lived, as far as I'm concerned, in the National Football League, and that's Ndamukong Suh. Signed a $114 million contract in the offseason with about $60 million guaranteed. Excellent player. Nobody in the National Football League has more sacks than him over his career in that time frame. I think it's 36 career sacks. An excellent player. Do you see the same? Is he an excellent player on film?
He really is, and he does so much. You'd say, Sue, not noticed. Well, there is, because he can push the pocket as well, and it helps the edge rushers. So, really good in the run game, good in the pass game, provides push, and can win one-on-one battles. So, I mean, there's a reason why he's getting paid like he is. He's a very, very talented player.
And he plays almost exclusively on the left side, doesn't he? Because you go back to the John Henderson, Marcus Stroud days here. They were left and right. Marcus Stroud played left. John Henderson played the right side. It didn't matter whether one was a one technique or a three technique. If they were on the left, that's where you were at. You know. So and Sue was a left side. So Brandon Linder.
Yeah, Brandon Linder will be.
That's a great matchup.
It is. It is. And Brandon Linder's a guy that we think very highly of, and so it'll be great. You know, a great opportunity for Brandon to go against a really, really talented player.
And folks, if you're at the game, get your binoculars out. And if you wanted to watch one matchup, I mean, that might be one of the best ones. And then Ndamukong Suh's got a little nasty to him now. He kicked off Alfred Morris's helmet last week in the Washington Redskins, and I would imagine that Brandon Linder might have a little response if all of a sudden that happens to him.
Well, I think really the binoculars comment is very true. I think on both sides, you know, to watch the offensive line, defensive line going at it, both sides of the ball, is really good, because we have a saying, it starts up front. In this game, that's where it will start.
All right, let's take a break here, and the final break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, some last-second thoughts here with the head coach right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jeff Lagerman alongside the head coach Gus Bradley. Last segment here of the Gus Bradley Show. And Gus, is there any anxiety as a head coach going into a game number two? Yeah, I'm asking a question now. Because of the injuries that you have. I mean, here it is week two, and you've got a lot of injuries to contend with your football team.
Yeah, the good news about the injuries, you know, trying to be optimist, is that the injuries are spread out through the position groups. It's not, sometimes with injuries, boy, the offensive line got hit hard, or the DBs got hit hard, or, you know, they're spread out, and that's what your depth is for. And, you got guys that can play in the NFL, and that's why you have 53 guys, and you have the 10 practice squad guys, so if you have injuries, you move guys up. And that's what they have to do. They have to perform at that level, and that's why you choose those guys. So guys got to step up, and, I've said this before, that great stories will come about through opportunities, and we'll have some stories that take place with these guys getting their chance.
What is the one thing that you look forward most to on Sunday at 4:05? With your football team.
Yeah. Well, my hope is that, because I know the talent that's there and how they perform. My hope is they just play up to what they're capable of doing. And then let's see. Then let's evaluate where we are. And, it sounds easier said than done. But that's the challenge for us. And I like the way we've practiced so far. We've got another day tomorrow. But how they're putting them together and stacking them up is a good sign. And now it's – I bet we were prepared last week. We just got to carry it over to Sunday.
If you had your choice, I mean, the NFL, you've got Monday night games, Sunday night games. Tonight you got a game, Thursday night game, and typically a lot of 1 o'clock kicks. Does a 4 o'clock kick make anything different in preparation?
Well, it's a little bit how you handle game day. You know, last week we had all night games in the preseason. Now it's a quick, you know, you wake up and you got to get ready to go. And now it's a 4 o'clock game. So the consistency, players, I think, would always love. But, you know, now with Thursday night games, Monday night games, Sunday games at 1, Sunday games at 4, I think that's the world that you want your players to understand that, hey, the times are going to change and there's different, and you're expected to go there and compete at the highest level. So it's a good challenge for us. So, yeah, we welcome that opportunity.
With the NFL seeming to be everywhere during the week, do you watch any of the other football games Monday night, Thursday night?
No, I don't get a chance to, you know, too much.
Too much,
you know,
work.
Just because of the schedule, yeah.
All right, Gus, best of luck on Sunday.
Okay, thank you.
And stay tuned next week, same time, same place, right here for the Gus Bradley Show.